And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And Thursday, January 5th, 2017, Happy New Year's to y'all. I suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy, and you can write down names, addresses, times, places, whatever you need to know to take action, and I encourage you to take action often. Let's start out with announcements from the California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team. They're having a restoration this Saturday, January 7th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Linda writes, Happy New Year. Let's welcome in 2017 with a return to beautiful Quail Hollow Ranch County Park and our long-term efforts at removal of the invasive non-native French broom. Recently, a group of us did a recon of all our French broom work sites. With the recent rains and warm fall temperatures last year, we have a lot of broom and a lot of work for the next 5 to 6 months. If any of you would like to join us during the midweek for an additional project, let me know. I'll give you that contact information right away. And Linda says, hope to see you there Saturday, rain or rain or rain. It's going to be raining, Linda. Biggest storm of the year. Well, first storm of the year, but it's supposed to be the biggest storm of the season. How do you get to Quail Hollow Ranch State County Park? Excuse me? Take Graham Hill Road north out of Santa Cruz. When you come down the hill into Felton, take the right at the light and go up East Zione Road about 2 miles, and then turn left on Quail Hollow Road. A half a mile up is the park entrance on the right. Meet at the gravel parking lot on the left-hand side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It will be raining. But if things get particularly unpleasant, and they might, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Do bring your own gloves and water. If you want more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or you could send her an email at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net. Or you could visit their website at www.cruzcnps.org. And from across Santa Clara Valley, we have an announcement to get involved in monitoring Sinbad Creek in Sunol. The Alameda Creek Alliance is hosting a community meeting in Sunol to discuss upcoming creek monitoring efforts on Sinbad Creek. Join us on Wednesday, January 25th, in the cafeteria of the Sunol Glen School, 11601 Main Street in Sunol, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. to learn how you can participate in these efforts. And don't worry, I'll be repeating this announcement for the next couple of weeks. Our goal is to collect baseline information on Sinbad Creek and see how it is changing over time. We'll discuss plans to map Sinbad Creek, monitor macroinvertebrates, i.e. bugs that live in the creek, monitor water temperature and flow on Sinbad Creek, measure bacteria, and address concerns with native plants. We need volunteers for these efforts, so join us on January 25th to add your voice to the discussion and learn how you can get involved. They're also asking you to watch for fish in Alameda Creek. With the recent winter storm, stream flow in Alameda Creek is high enough for steelhead trout to try and migrate upstream through the flood control channel in lower Alameda Creek. Please keep an eye out at the Bart Weir in Fremont and other portions of the flood control channel for steelhead after winter storms. Adult steelhead have typically been seen in the lower creek from January through early March trying to ascend the Bart Weir after a major storm on the declining end of a hydrograph, typically when the stream flow is down to about 200 to 400 cubic feet per second. You can check the current Alameda Creek stream flow on the web in Lower Niles Canyon and in the flood control channel in Union City. See our webpage on what to do if you do spot fish in the creek. And the next Alameda Creek Restoration Day is on January 21st. Volunteer at the Alameda Creek Alliance for the morning of habitat restoration along Alameda Creek on Saturday, January 21st from 10 a.m. to noon. Meet at the Niles Staging Area in Fremont. It's a parking lot on Old Canyon Road near Canyon Oaks Court in the Niles area of Fremont. The address is roughly 720 Old Canyon Road, and they'll work until noon. They'll be clearing out invasive plants, planting native shrubs and plants, and doing some general cleaning around our adopted restoration site. This work continues past work by ACA volunteers, and your efforts will enhance habitat for fish and wildlife along Alameda Creek for years to come. Please wear long pants and sturdy closed-toed shoes that can get dirty. No sandals or flip-flops, please. We provide gloves and tools. The work isn't much on a slope, but the ground can be uneven. If the ground is likely to be wet, please wear clothes that can get dirty. There is no poison oak in the immediate area where they'll be working. Expect cool weather and morning dew when we start. Heavy rain cancels. All participants need to have a signed waiver form, one for the ACA and one for Alameda County, and anyone under 18 needs to have a parental signature. And you can find out all about it at www.alamedacreek.org. That's alamedacreek.org. Also coming up in February is the Earth First Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous, happening February 7th through the 14th, way back in the cold, snowy Hudson Valley. And we get this news from Hudson Valley Earth First. The Hudson Valley Earth First Group will be hosting the 2017 Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous February 7th through the 14th. Get ready for some awesome workshops, winter hikes, music campfires, and lots of fun. Smiley face. We are raising money to host 75 or more people for a week-long gathering of Earth Firsters, eco-defenders, and earth-loving rebels nestled in the Catskill Mountains within the Hudson River watershed. We have reserved heated cabins, most important, to engage in important movement discussions and provide a space to plug into existing campaigns and projects in your bioregion. And they need money. This is going to be a fairly expensive organizers' conference due to the fact they have to rent these cabins. So they're asking folks to go to Fundly, fundly.com/Hudson-Valley-Earth-First-Action-Fund and contribute money. I hope they raise it. It's be a great thing. Once again, the Earth First Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous, February 7th through the 14th. And getting into news, an Italian mink farm has been raided by the Animal Liberation Front. This news received anonymously and published in Biteback and the Earth First Newswire. 600 mink were released from cages at a fur farm in Misano di Guerra di Adda in Bergamo, Italy, late on December 30th. ALF and Free the Animals were painted on a wall at the farm. The farm reported damages of 30,000 euros. According to media reports, the minks, once released, scattered into the surrounding countryside like any self-righteous mink would do. And you can find out more at www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. Tragedy strikes northwest orcas again. There have been two more deaths. 2016 was a devastating year for southern resident killer whales of the Pacific Northwest. Six orcas from the J-pod and L-pod died in 2016, two very recently. J-34, an adolescent male, was recently found on the coast of British Columbia. His necropsy suggested the 18-year-old male orca died of blunt force trauma caused by a boat. We're awaiting the release of further details in the weeks ahead, and on Tuesday, January 3rd, the Center for Whale Research announced its determination that Granny, the oldest known orca on the planet and matriarch for the southern resident killer whales, had died. She's not been seen for several months. Granny was thought to be more than 105 years old, and there are just 78 southern residents alive today. And you can get more information about this and other salmon and steelhead news at www.wildsalmon.org. And the last endangered Mexican porpoises are to be rounded up by U.S. Navy-trained dolphins in this story from The Guardian, as found on the Earth First Newswire. U.S. Navy-trained dolphins and their handlers will participate in a last-ditch effort to catch the last few dozen of Mexico's vaquita porpoises to save them from extinction. The trained animals will use their sonar to locate the extremely elusive vaquitas, then surface and advise their handlers. The number of vaquitas, the world's smallest and most endangered porpoise species, has been devastated by illegal fishing for the swim bladder of the totoaba, a fish that is prized delicacy in China. According to rough estimates, with the vaquita population falling by 40% a year and only 60 alive a year ago, there could be as few as 36 left. Although the vaquita has never been held successfully in captivity, experts hope that to put the remaining porpoises in floating pens in a safe bay in the Gulf of California, also known as the Sea of Cortez, where they can be protected and hopefully breed. International experts confirmed the participation of the Navy Marine Mammal Program in the effort, which is expected to start in the spring. Jim Fallon of the U.S. Navy Space and Naval Warfare Systems Center Pacific said on Tuesday the dolphins' participation was still in the planning stage. Their specific task is to locate vaquitas, which only live in the Gulf of California, Fallon said. They would signal that by surfacing and returning to the boat from which they were launched. The dolphins have been trained by the Navy for tasks such as locating sea mines. Lorenzo Rojas Bracco of the International Committee for the Recovery of the Vaquita wrote that an international group of experts, including Navy personnel, have been working on two primary goals: determining the feasibility of locating and catching vaquitas as phase one, and as a second phase, to determine the feasibility of temporarily housing vaquitas in the Gulf of California. Rojas Bracco said the effort by the international team of experts would involve locating them, capturing them, and putting them in some kind of protective area, probably a floating enclosure or pen in a protected bay where they would not be endangered by fishing nets. Mexico has banned gill nets that often trap vaquitas in the area, but has had trouble enforcing it because the totoaba draws very high prices on the black market. At the current rate of loss, the vaquita will likely decline to extinction by 2022 unless the current gill net ban is maintained and effectively enforced. And the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is helping the Mexican Navy with that effort. Some experts, like Omar Vidal, Mexico's director of the World Wildlife Fund, oppose the capture plan, which could risk killing a few remaining vaquitas and open up a free-for-all of illegal fishing once they are removed from their natural habitat. "We must strive to save this porpoise where it belongs, in the healthy upper Gulf of California," he said. "Catch and enclose is risky. The few remaining females could die during capture, dooming the species. Breeding in captivity has successfully saved other species, such as the red wolf and California condor, but the vaquita has only been scientifically described since the 1950s and has never been bred or even held in captivity." Experts including Rojas Bracco, Barbara Taylor, leader of the Marine Mammal Genetics Program at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and Sarah Mesnick of NOAA's Southwest Fisheries Science Center, emphasized that the capture program should not divert efforts and resources away from the extension and enforcement of the gillnet ban, which remains the highest priority conservation actions for the species. "Veterinarians would evaluate vaquita's reactions and release stressed individuals," they wrote. "Should a death occur, the team would reevaluate the sanctuary strategy. It is important to stress that the recovery team goal is to return vaquita from the temporary sanctuary into a gillnet-free environment," they wrote. And you can find this and other news at theearthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And turning to news of biological diversity, new protections have been had for 32 endangered species. In 2016, as the result of our remarkably productive 757 species agreement, the Center for Biological Diversity successfully obtained federal protection and a new lease on life for no fewer than 32 species, bringing the total protected so far to 176. These included numerous urgently imperiled species in Hawaii, plants, birds, and insects, 5 species in Samoa, 2 birds, 2 snails, and a bat. An elusive orchid was protected in the Southwest after 41 years on the waiting list. We also secured protection for 2.5 million acres of critical habitat, including 1.8 million for Sierra Nevada amphibians. Meanwhile, our work to save America's jaguars hit the big time. More than 20 million people saw the video we released of El Jefe earlier this year. Our legal work overturned a decision denying protection to America's wolverines, severely threatened by climate change, and forced Mendocino, California, to cancel its contract with Wildlife Services, a federal program that kills millions of animals every year. And in an Endangered Species Act win, the Tobush fishhook cactus has been saved. In a new victory for the Endangered Species Act, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed last week to downlist the Tobush fishhook cactus from endangered to threatened, meaning the tiny spiny plant has begun recovering under the act's protection. Found in oak woodland savannas of the Edwards Plateau in Texas, the cactus faces threats from livestock grazing, urban sprawl, periodic fires, parasites, a small population size, and climate change. Since it was protected under the Endangered Species Act in 1979, many more populations have been found and several have been protected. And a reward has been up to $16,500 to help nab a red wolf shooter. The Center for Biological Diversity recently doubled the reward for clues aiding in the arrest and conviction of anyone involved in the latest killing of an endangered red wolf, bringing the total to $15,000, and since then another group added $1,500. The wolf's body was discovered on North Carolina's Paukesson Lake National Wildlife Refuge, where red wolves have the greatest amount of protection under the Endangered Species Act. Decades of persecution had left only 17 wild red wolves by 1973 when they were protected and taken in for captive breeding. But ever since wolf releases began in the mid-1980s, shootings have thwarted recovery efforts. There are only 45 red wolves left, said the center's Brett Hartle. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must rejuvenate stalled efforts to save these amazing animals now. And companies are seeking a 50-year free pass to kill endangered bats. 9 oil and gas companies are proposing to be legally allowed to harm and kill imperiled bat species in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Western Virginia over the next 50 years, including from fracking and pipeline construction. All the species, which include Indiana, northern long-eared, little brown, eastern small-footed, and tricolored bats, are already in extreme danger from white nose syndrome, a fungus that has killed more than 6 million of the flying mammals nationwide, said Center for Biological attorney Jared Margulis. As these bats get ever closer to extinction, we must do more to protect them, not to further endanger them. And a court has slapped down a highway widening project in California. A federal judge has put the brakes on a highway widening project in California that threatened wildlife like San Francisco garter snakes and California red-legged frogs. The decision follows a legal challenge by the center and allies who are fighting plans to widen Highway 1 in Pacifica, California. The judge said California's Transportation Department violated the Endangered Species Act in approving the controversial project. We're hoping the agency gets the message that the community doesn't want or need this wasteful and damaging highway widening project, said the center's Jeff Miller. And Hawaiian bird, flowers, and tropical lizards are closer to protection. Good news this week for the iconic, urgently threatened Hawaiian iwiwi, 2 California flowers, and 2 lizards from the Florida and Caribbean. Following petitions from the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed the iwiwi and the San Fernando spine flower for Endangered Species Act protection and announced that the Florida scrub lizard, lesser Virgin Island skink, and Lassix lupin flower may warrant protection. The iwiwi, or scarlet Hawaiian honey creeper, is a red bright bird, or a bright red bird, living high up in the Hawaiian forests. The spine flower, once thought to be extinct, survives in only 2 Southern California populations, and Florida scrub lizards need habitat near pine and oak trees. The lesser skinks live in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. The Lassix lupin is a pink alpine wildflower whose total global range in Northern California covers less than 4 acres. These species are at risk from climate change, development, farming, invasive species, and other threats. And a massive Utah coal sale was halted to save grouse and the climate. After the center and allies appealed a federal decision to lease 6,175 acres of public land for coal mining in Utah, including crucial habitat for the rare dancing greater sage grouse, the feds had to stop the sale pending a review, which could take up to 45 days. The feds had offered up an area beneath Utah's beautiful Fish Lake and Monte La Salle National Forest containing 56 million tons of coal, despite a recently declared 3-year moratorium on all new coal mining on federal lands. And a survey has revealed an emergency for Africa's savanna elephants. The Great Elephant Census has some dreadful news. Savanna elephants, genetically distinct from forest elephants, already known to be in steep decline, are frighteningly worse off than we thought. This mega-survey documents a 30% decline in savanna elephants over the last 7 years, attributed largely to poaching for ivory. African elephants are also threatened by habitat loss and human encroachment and conflicts. It's now estimated that only 352,271 savanna elephants remain, compared to estimates of up to 650,000 back in 2013. Surveys of elephant carcasses suggest their deaths likely exceeded births, which is a dire situation. These results are shocking, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Tanya Sanyarib. A world without elephants would be a very sad place. It's time for international action. And a study, killing predators does not truly cut livestock losses. Killing predators like wolves, mountain lions, and bears to protect livestock may appeal to cattle owners, but a new rigorous review of multiple studies shows little or no scientific support that it actually reduces livestock losses. And sometimes it even leads to increased losses. This highlights the folly in the common practice of killing predators, such as coyotes and wolves, in response to livestock depredations, as carried out by the secretive federal program called Wildlife Services and many state game agencies. This study shows that not only is Wildlife Services' annual killing of tens of thousands of wolves, coyotes, bears, bobcats, cougars, and other animals unconscionable, it's also ineffective, said the center's Michael Robinson. Our government should ground the aerial snipers, pull the poisons, and remove the steel leg hold traps in response to these findings. And 1.8 million Sierra Nevada acres have been protected for frogs and toads. After more than 15 years of work by the Center for Biological Diversity, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has protected 1.8 million acres of critical habitat in California for Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frogs, Yosemite toads, and a northern population of mountain yellow-legged frogs. Sierra Nevada and mountain yellow-legged frogs have declined by about 90% throughout the Sierra, and more than half of former Yosemite toad populations are now gone. Yellow-legged frogs and Yosemite toads were a common sight in the High Sierra until fairly recently, said the center's Jeff Miller. Their rapid declines are a warning of the failing health of our High Sierra ecosystems. Critical habitat will help save them and also protect habitat for other species as well as water sources for all Californians. And it's about time the ancient nautilus moves toward protection. A unique ocean species called the chambered nautilus, a spiral-shelled relative of squid and octopus, is often described as a living fossil, ironic since it isn't far from extinction and then real fossilhood. This 90-tentacled mollusk is imperiled by over-harvesting for its beautiful shell. But finally, in response to a center petition, the National Marine Fisheries Service has declared that it may warrant Endangered Species Act protection. This is fantastic news, said the center's Abel Valdivia. We're lucky to share a planet with this ancient creature. And a suit has been filed to save Montana grizzlies from hunting. In advance of the expected removal of federal protection from Yellowstone's famed grizzly bears, the state of Montana has fast-tracked grizzly hunting rules to open the door for trophy hunting of the bears. So the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies filed a suit challenging that illegal move. The long-term harm caused by trophy hunting is well established in scientific literature. By targeting the biggest and strongest males, trophy hunting reduces a species' genetic viability and has cascading impacts on the social dynamics of apex predators, including increasing infanticide. And a recent study demonstrated that when states allow recreational trophy hunting of carnivores, it increases the rate of poaching by making killing more socially acceptable among the population. Recent polling shows Americans overwhelmingly oppose trophy hunting, said Andrea Santarceri, a Center for Biological Diversity attorney. By purposely limiting public participation on the trophy hunting issue, Montana is trying to drown out these voices. Montana's constitution and its laws required more. And two Washington wolves were gunned down by helicopter. Washington State wasted no time carrying out the wolf kill order. In fact, the very day they announced the order in a newsletter, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife revealed that aerial gunners had shot and killed two members of the Profanity Peak Pack in northeast Washington. One of the dead wolves was the pack's breeding female. The kill order was issued under a new lethal removal protocol agreed to by the state's wolf advisory group after the agency concluded that wolves from the pack had killed cattle. But although the protocol specifies that illegal removal is best done incrementally, Washington already has sharpshooters on the ground trying to kill yet more wolves. Washington State has made things worse, not better, said the center's Amarok Weiss. Not only is it a tragedy to have these two beautiful wolves wiped out, but there's a very strong science showing that killing a breeding animal can cause a wolf pack to split up or dissolve, and that can even spur additional livestock conflicts. And the Greenland shark was the world's oldest vertebrate, according to research published by the journal Science earlier. A female Greenland shark was about 400 years old before she died. Her species now holds the record for the longest living vertebrate. Made using a novel radiocarbon dating technique, the estimate thoroughly trounces the previously known vertebrate old age record, a bowhead whale believed to be 211 years old. Unfortunately, radiocarbon data isn't exact. The shark could have been born anywhere between 1501 and 1744, but even at the young end, 272 years old, she'd still be the oldest vertebrate ever recorded. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you can listen to an update tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. You can also listen to WNMB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning, to KRFP 90.3 Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., WLSL 92.7 FM in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, and you can listen to Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 when they broadcast the Earth First Update, whenever that is. Or you could also go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.